You'll be calling it an AT-AT instead of an AT-AT.
It is an AT-AT.
No, it's not. It's an AT-AT. It's an AT-AT. You don't call the other one an AT-AT, do you?
I do. I do. An AT-AT. AT-AT.
Look at the AT-AT going on its two legs over there. Those AT-AT are awesome in the Battle of Endor. Come on. It's an AT-AT. All-terrain armored transport.
No, it's an AT-AT.
This is the Citadel Cafe. This is the Citadel Cafe, episode number 9, recorded live Wednesday, February 22nd, 2012. I am Joel Duggan of StarCrossedOnline.com, and to my right is Mr. Peyton Francis of CardboardTreehouse.com. Peyton, how are you doing this fine evening?
Very well, sir. Yasas. That should be hello in Greek.
Yeah. Nice.
Well, we're working through it, so. Okay.
Yes. Well, down the list, right? Are you going alphabetical, or are you just kind of picking at random?
I'm just randomly picking.
Random.
Them.
Right on. And to my other right is Mr. Chad Merlin, and the only thing that you need to know about Chad is that you don't need to know anything about Chad, except, of course, how he's doing tonight.
Quick hello.
Nice read.
Nice. Well done. Well done.
Hey, hey.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, man. I was not ready for that. Oh, my goodness. If you happen to be new to the show, the Citadel Cafe is where me and my two friends here come to hang out and talk about the geeky stuff that we're into. We gravitate towards sci-fi and fantasy, but we're not myopic. We'll talk about anything from movies, television, books, websites. If we think it's cool, we will let you know. And also, if we think it sucks rocks, we will let you know that, too. So I guess we can just start off by touching base. Like I feel like I've been so busy with accounting and other crap these days that I haven't really been able to catch up with you guys very much. So what's new, Peyton? Anything going on with you?
The odds and ends. Work's going all right. I just posted a couple more infographics up on my blog and my website and stuff. So
right on.
That's kind of cool, and I'm doing some more concept development on my own webcomic. So, with all the reading I've been doing about it and thinking and, writing stuff down, it's time to put up or shut up. So
yeah, time to do some drawing.
Yeah. So the drawings, they're coming together. We're finding some ideas and stuff.
Very cool.
Anyway, so we'll talk more about it later, in a couple of weeks as we get closer to it. But
yeah, can you give us a teaser? Like, do you know?
The general concept will be... episodes from my youth or other people's stories that could be integrated into that particular character.
Cool.
Okay.
I grew up in a very rural area of Newfoundland.
Nice.
And I grew up in the 70s, 80s sort of thing. So,
right,
make
on.
Your own fun.
Yeah.
So.
No, that's, I mean, that's cool. I mean, write what you know.
Exactly,
it's something
right?
that I've heard a number of times. I've certainly passed that on to people. And so that's good. Because, I mean, you're not going to run out of material anytime soon. That's
no, for sure.
For sure.
Especially now that I have my own son, like half that stuff will just be folded into it, right?
Oh,
like
yeah.
And I also have nieces and nephews. As I was telling Joel, I was talking to my sister, and she has 3 children. The oldest is 17, then is 15, and then the daughter is 13. Now, the daughter is becoming interested in boys, and boys becoming interested in her, but her 2 older brothers are cracking 6'2", 6'3", and they're monsters, right?
So, the mountain and the hound.
Yeah, exactly.
Nice.
That is perfect, yeah. So anyway, a young boy came up requesting my niece's phone number. Was she obliged? And he saw her last name and said, "Is you know Cole?" And she's like, "That's my brother." He's like, "Oh," and just gave her the number back and walked away. I'm like, "He's doing a good job. He's doing a good job."
Good.
So things like that could definitely be rolled into the comic, right? So,
but Peyton, did you know that Joel does a webcomic too?
Yes, so I've heard.
Yeah, I do.
Okay,
I do. It's actually been something that I've been doing a lot of lately, kind of trying to draw ahead. On StarCrossed, which is the same website I talked about at the beginning of the show. Yeah. But yeah, things have been going really well. And I was actually just on the Webcomics Workshop podcast last night with Don Griffin and Byron Wilkins. And they do this Webcomic Workshop podcast every 2 weeks. And they're all webcomic creators. And they bring a couple issues to the table from each person every week. And the issue that I brought as a guest was about my upcoming book and something that we'll talk about a little bit later with regards to Kickstarter. But it looks like after a conversation with the webcomics workshop people last night and a conversation with my accountant this morning that I will be able to do a book some point this year. The goal is to definitely have something in my hands and ready to sell at HalCon in the fall, which is the other big news. That's the meeting that I'm having tomorrow. I'm not sure if I've announced it on the show or not, but I'm actually a guest at HalCon 2012. So I'll be in the author section with a table doing signings, and I will also be doing workshops from the con. I want to do a podcasting workshop. I'm probably going to do one about comics as well. It's a 3-day con this year. So Peyton, you and I were there last year and it was only 2 days, and it's a full 3 days this year. So it'll be very cool in that respect. But the meeting tomorrow is with Jennifer, one of the people on the board for the con, and it's all volunteer run. So in exchange for my table and the signing and the lunch, I think that they'll bring me, I have to sort out what I'm going to do for them in return. So I'm talking with her about that. I'm also going to try to be involved in the con on the back end. I can't volunteer on the day to do a whole lot because I'm going to be doing my own stuff. But I wanted to kind of be a point of contact for maybe new artists that are coming to their first con or comic artists or people that aren't really sure where they want to be. And explaining the venues and stuff like that. Because I think, at no fault of theirs, because they're such a new con, they're learning every time they do something. I think you and I, Peyton, would agree that we had not a lot of information last year.
Yeah, and so it was maybe a little bit conflicting other pieces. So maybe.
Yeah, so it was hard to get our facts straight and figure out where we should have been, what we wanted to do. So I want to make sure that people that are, especially if they're green to the con, like maybe if it's not their first con, but if it's their first time at HalCon, I think that they, as artists, they should have a heads up in what to expect and where to be and all that kind of thing. So,
You could also do the tie it in with the digital dating, and you could do like the geek love sort of thing, right?
Yeah, and I was thinking about that. I'd have to talk to Laura about that for DDP to see if she's interested in going, because if that's the case, then we might be able to get her to come in and do like a live DDP do a geek focused DDP, or possibly even do a live episode of the Citadel Cafe if both you guys are available. Were you planning on going back this year, Peyton? Do you have
I think so. Well, I think if I go back this year, I'll definitely be up and try to go up in the artist alley as opposed to the area.
Yeah.
And yeah, the vendors area, you know, so it was all right, but I think that just traffic flow and expectations would be better suited to be directly in the artist alley. So.
Yeah, and I mean, if you're starting your comic now, you'll be in good shape to have like a little mini comic that you can just, you know, give out to people and just as a promo thing, just kind of like a simple photocopy, staple bound, you know, nothing too big, just to kind of get the comic out in the right people's hands. Because I mean, everybody at the con is at least sideways interested in comics, if not directly, you know?
Yeah.
Look, dude, you would be like, one of the things I did last year at the con, I had these flyers printed up, and it was basically a QR code to my website, a big graphic of Sam singing in the shower, the alien from the comic. And then I had a map to our table. And I went out to one of the big events that was emptying out, like the costume contest, where basically almost everybody in attendance at the con is at this one giant hall. And it was over at like 2:30. So I went up at about 25 after 2. And I was just standing there as the whole room emptied and was just handing out flyers. And just one after another, anybody that walked by me. And I mean, there was the flow of people was 10 people wide. So I wasn't getting everybody, but I was getting a lot of people. But after you start handing things out, 5 people deep just started walking by me with their hand out. I mean, they had no idea what I was giving them. They just know that it was free. They probably thought it was part of the con because I had a tag around my neck. Like I had a vendor tag. So
I'm official.
Yeah, well, exactly.
Yeah. He wasn't spreading SARS or anything. So.
Yeah.
Our plan is coming together perfectly.
Very cool. Yeah, no, it was nice to be able to do that. But then I started seeing an increase of flow to the table, and I started asking people, okay, well, how did you find... how did you find the table? And they said, oh, well, they dug under their pocket and they picked up this flyer. And I was like, perfect. You know, like, I mean, it was I can't remember how much I spent on them. It was the better part of, I think, $50, but I printed like 1,000. And I handed out a ton, and I printed half of them with HalCon specific. And then I printed another half of them, just general website stuff for me, so I can use those anywhere. And I've done a couple things around the city where I've left them in cafes and whatnot. So,
good.
Yeah. What about you, Chad? What have you've been up to this week?
Tonight, technical difficulties. I just
had
a little chat with Bell Tech Support, and it's I don't think he's one of our listeners, but a little shout out to Mark from Bell Tech Support. Thank you very much for not treating me like I'm a douche, and me telling him, yes, my computer is plugged into the wall. You know, he pretty much said, okay, this guy knows what he's talking about. So he was pretty cool. No, he was pretty easygoing. Yeah, just a basic, the firmware needed an update. But the only other thing, man, thanks, Joel, for introducing me to Scott Johnson out there. Because I started following him on Twitter, and he just out of the blue says, hey, Zombie Gunship is free today on the iPhone. What? Because I'd looked at that game and had seriously considered playing that.
Right.
And so I went, because that was like my favorite level on Call of Duty 4, Modern Warfare.
Okay.
And because you're in the Spectre gunship and it's awesome. Anyway.
Yeah. And I picked it up too.
Oh, that's right. Yeah. I did see that on Game Center. Yeah
I picked that up too. It is pretty fun. I mean, it's the gameplay is no different than a lot of other games that I've played, but the graphics and the idea behind it is kind of fun. And it's really fun once you get up to the larger guns.
Yeah. Did you upgrade your guns at all yet? Or
yes. Yeah. I haven't upgraded the biggest. I've got the biggest gun, the 100mm or the.
Yeah.
I've got
that
one.
Do you have the 40?
Yes.
Okay, yeah. The 40s, I use that all the time.
Yeah, that's the one that I like too. I mean, it's cool. It's well done. You know, it's a very simple, really good touch-based game. I don't like that you can't cycle back and forth. Like, you have to, it's like channel surfing. You can't go down. You have to go around the horn.
Yeah.
Like that kind of stuff is a little bit, that's a little bit annoying. But other than that, it was a good game. So, did you know that Scott Johnson is the guy behind the Frog Pants podcasting network? Yeah, okay.
And if you follow him and don't know that on Twitter, you're an idiot.
Yeah, he's very good at promoting everything.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, I'm a bit of a fanboy, but one of the shows that you might want to check out if you like, you know, some of the apps and things that he's recommending is App Slappy.
Yes.
Yeah.
That out. But you know what? I have hard enough time listening to this podcast over just to, you know, like see the intro and the outro and stuff.
Yeah.
And I listen to DDP when I go on drives. Like this weekend, we're going to listen to the newest one.
Right on.
Because we're going to Ottawa for the weekend, and finally get to skate the Rideau Canal after all these years.
Nice.
So I'm going to finally get to do that this weekend. So
make sure you get a beaver tail.
I've already had one. I don't know what those taste like.
Yeah, well, you should try to just grab it and put it on the iPhone just for the drive, just in case you want something different. I mean, it's very entertaining. It's not techie. It's just three people talking about the cool stuff on their iPhones and how much they like it or dislike it. They review apps and they talk about a little bit of news, and it's really kind of low key.
I don't know if I don't know if it'll be me having the problem with it as opposed to my co-driver. So,
well, one of the things that they talk about is the iPads. I mean, she might be interested because she has one of those. So
we could try. Yes, we could
try.
Yeah,
we try.
But thanks for being optimistic, don't
you? No, I know. You know, well, look, we've got her into Star Wars, and we've got her into the Game of Thrones. So we're little baby steps,
baby steps. Peyton, you okay there? Did something just break or something?
I just lost you guys for a second there. I was like, for people just tuning in, I've dropped out of the feed like three times. So then it just sort of someone turned the volume all the way down and then back up.
Anyway. Well, just to let you know, Peyton, we talked about you, but not directly to you.
That's okay. That's okay. I'm used to this.
Your ears are burning. You know why. Oh, man. All right. Well, I mean, speaking of Game of Thrones, I guess we can move on to the movies, TV, and video this week. And of course, we continue with our Winter is Coming countdown with episode 5, The Wolf and the Lion. The events of the episode primarily deal with Lord Eddard Stark's investigations into the death of the previous Hand, John Arryn. Am I right, Chad? Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. In the city of King's Landing, the tourney at the Hand comes to an end, while the various factions that plot for power are revealed to the viewer. This delicate balance is undone when news arrives that Tyrion Lannister has been arrested by Catelyn Tully, which is the very last event of the last episode. The title of the episode refers to the fact that the Starks, whose sigil is a wolf, may soon be at war with the Lannisters, whose sigil is a lion. And the Eyrie appears in a new as a new location between King's Landing and Winterfell on the opening credit map. And that's something we actually haven't, I don't know if we've touched base too much on that. But so before we dive into the show, I really like the opening credits for this show.
Awesome.
Such a neat idea of reminding you every single time that you watch it about where the layout is, you know, that, you know, Dothrak is across the sea and all these different places. Gives you a good visual of the wall because it's not in every show, that kind of thing. Plus, it's a beautiful stylized kind of, it means CG, but it's meant to look like stop motion.
Yeah.
And it's really well done.
They do a really good job of it. And I think that once they showed the Eerie, that it's safe to say that each episode they're letting you know what's to come and where the episode is going to take place. And that I like that as opposed to pulling out a map, which I had to do when I read the books. It's like, where are they talking about now?
Yeah.
So yeah, though, that's pretty cool.
And speaking of maps, I sent this out on Google+, but Jocelyn had tagged a graphical representation of both the Westeros map as well as the family trees and relations and houses on Google+, and sent it to the Sizzle Cafe. And the cool thing about it is, unlike some other experiences we've had with Wikipedia, Chad, the this particular graphic is based on the television show, not the books. So you can read and enjoy this whole map and get names right and families and houses and locations without spoiling anything for yourself, because it doesn't go beyond the first season of Game of Thrones on HBO. So it's on Google+, the Sizzle Cafe. You can find it there, and it's really worth checking out, because it does give kind of an idea of like where the main families are, but then all these other offshoot characters, and you're like, why is this person in it? Or why is, you know, Roy Dutrisse yammering on about this guy for so long? And then you realize, oh, it's actually Eddard's cousin. Like, you know, there's a couple things like that I didn't realize how closely people were related, because they had different last names or they were in different locations. So it's definitely worth checking out. So
I use that actual sheet as a, I guess you could say, a checklist for crossing people off. As I was reading forward, I was like, he's not there anymore. She's not there anymore.
Yeah, yeah, really.
I showed my wife. I was like, see all these people? Now see all these. Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. Isn't that cool?
Nice. Oh, man. So, Peyton, what were your impressions of this episode?
I thought some of the politics is getting a bit deeper. If you're not like paying attention, you can get lost kind of quickly. Mm-hmm. Like my wife and I are watching it, and we're like, "Who's that again?" Well, that's the guy from the first episode who arranged the marriage, and you know, the guy who was in the dungeons.
Oh, Varys or Viserys or in the dungeon,
and he was in it talking to the eunuch.
Oh no, he's from and he's across the seas. Yeah. He arranges the marriage.
He arranges the marriage. Yeah.
Yes. Okay. So I was right, because Jocelyn and I were talking about this, and she thought it was Mormont, but it's not.
No.
No, it's the other guy.
Yeah. Oh my God! I was gonna talk about him. What was? Oh no! See, this drives me nuts.
I don't think anybody's gonna judge us because
Magister. Oh, chat room. Magister. Magister.
Yeah, I know who you mean. Yeah, the guy that presented Daenerys to Drogo.
Yes.
Okay. Anyway, so those two were in the basement, and that's the part where they're plotting, you know, the fate of the kingdoms and what's happening, and that was the big, like you said, Peyton, that was the big bit of information that sparked the king into wanting to kill Daenerys, which is the fact that she's going to have a baby and possibly a son. I mean, no, back then you can't tell, but.
Yeah. And then it also in turn sparks Stark saying, you know, Ned's like, dude, you can't do that.
that's not exactly.
You go that road, you're not coming back from that. You can't do that. And then, you know, lines drawn in the sand, and things sort of take a downward spiral from that point.
Yeah, and Ned cuts ties to friends at probably the worst possible moment that he could.
Yeah. And
he covered for his wife right away, though.
Yeah, under his orders, for sure.
Yeah,
which was well done. You know, even though that's the first he heard of it, so yeah. And the at the Eerie or whatever,
the Eerie,
yeah, the Eerie. Thank you. When you know, I want to see the little man fly. That cracked me up. You know, for one, that's just, you know, that's the entire staging of that is just a little bit creepy, right?
Oh, really creepy.
But then I'm thinking, like, as a parent, your son is a 10, 12-year-old actor, and this is the role he's reading for? Like, how do you say, okay, well, this is what you're going to have to do, right? Yeah. And then are they using a prosthetic, or is
it has to be.
Like,
it
has logistics to be a all around yeah. that? It's like, you know.
Yeah, when he's on his mom's breast, that has to be a prosthetic. There's yeah. no way.
And then it is a prosthetic. Like, is there someone standing behind it, you know, with a pump or something? And, you know, like, is there like, you know, something like all the guys operating Jabba is like eight guys behind her, working a bunch of pulleys and stuff.
That's anyway, hilarious. Just, that's funny.
Yeah, but I really like Tyrion. Like the entire exchange when the robbers sort of roll up on them.
Mm-hmm. Oh yes, yeah.
Yeah, and the shield is like, you know, he's got the shield and he's, you know, he used it to protect himself. He's like, this is sort of a pivotal moment here, and he's like, no, I'm gonna hang out. It's kind of cool.
Yeah, well, because he's looking at the horses and he's trying to figure out if he should flee or if he should, you know, will he be yeah. better off if he protects Catelyn and then wins that part of her trust, right?
Yeah. Yeah, and I think he will. And also the guy who I don't know his name, but the fellow who when he first goes into the when he goes into the bar and he says, you know, who's gonna give me a room? And the guy,
Bronn.
Right? Yeah,
Bronn.
Yeah, you know, they really really develop a little friendship, you know, throughout that fight afterwards from that fight. So he's like, I like you. Anyway,
I like the hey, now you need a woman, and he, yeah. and he's I'm willing if she is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's the name of the guy is Magister Illyrio.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Great. I was trying to look that up too. Yeah. I didn't get that far.
And for anyone doesn't know, Peter Dinklage. Yeah, he's on the cover of GQ.
Is he really?
Yeah. Yeah. There's a link in the notes, and he's they showed his photo shoot, and he's standing around all of these like 6 foot tall half naked models. And he's just lounging in his chair, completely nonchalant. And then they show a video of the photo shoot, and he's like, "I thought this was for a good housekeeping." Completely, you know, he's a pretty cool cat.
Yeah, yeah, he strikes me as a very cool guy.
What was that movie? Oh, sorry, guys. I was just he was in the movie Death at a Funeral or whatever.
Yeah, yeah, the original version. Yeah,
he blackmailed them. He was blackmailing yeah. the family because he was fooling around with their dad.
Yeah.
Wait a minute. You're not offended that dad was fooling around with another man that is a midget, but the fact that he's white, that's the problem?
Yeah. Oh, man. Yeah. No, I really like how snappy the dialogue has become for Tyrion. I mean, both in the books and in the TV shows, it really progresses well. And he says, like, just the right thing at just the right time. And yeah. I really enjoyed it. Although, correct me if I'm wrong, Chad, was it not an axe in the book or a mace? It wasn't a shield that he used.
I think it was another weapon, but yeah. it's been long now, man.
I want to say it was an axe because it was like it was something that he pulled out of another person that fell. Like he didn't have it on him.
Ah, busy zombie lord axe. Thank you.
Yes.
Yeah, I think though that using the shield was a good choice because like visually in the time frame allotted for a television show, it sort of shows that shift from being sort of a self-interest, cowardice sort of thing.
Yes.
You know, trying to protect himself to Agreed. Then stepping up to be the hero sort of.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, and you're right. Like I mean both work, but I think visually on a television show the shield is a better choice.
Yeah.
So, I mean, one of the things that I liked about that scene in particular while we're on it is the choreographed fighting between Catelyn's knights, I guess. Not the old guy. Who is the sellsword? The sellsword that's with Bronn. Yeah. Some of the cool stuff that he does is really really cool for TV. You know, like instead of going right at the guy, he just kind of deftly dodges the sword to one side, extends his sword past the guy.
Yeah.
And then puts it on his neck and then puts his foot on the guy's chest and basically kicks him backwards so that he goes along the sword and cuts his neck. And it was really just kind of like, I know your move, 3 moves before you make it sort of stuff. It was very, very cool, which I think contrasts something that comes a little bit later in the show.
Yes.
And with the eerie in that area, like I've always been really taken by the design and the concept of the dungeon that Tyrion finds himself in,
where
there's no doors, the door behind him is locked, but there's no bars. It's just one giant window, but you're, I don't know, 3,000 feet.
Yeah,
in the air.
They're saying that it's impenetrable, and the guy says, "Give me 10 guys with grappling hooks, and we'll
We'll impregnate the bitch.
Yeah.
I'll try wording there. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that I didn't like about that is that there was a great sequence in the book of them climbing up.
Yes.
To the summit of the Eyrie, and I don't think that they would have had to do all of it, but it would have been nice to see a shot from like the foot of the cliff looking straight up. You know, and we saw it from a distance, but we didn't really get it. You don't get a real sense. Feel for it, you know, as you do once you're on top of it. So I wish there was a little bit more, because I felt like they were kind of at the bottom and then at the top in no time. And in the book, that's a huge deal, like how long it takes the horses to climb and all that kind of stuff.
And he gets into that again later on in the books too. So
it right. comes.
So
yeah,
maybe we'll get to see it in a future season.
So. Yeah, it's kind of hard. I'm having the same problem you are, where I finished the book and I'm trying to remember what events have happened in which story.
Yes, Jocelyn actually sent me a DM on Twitter because she encountered a very significant part in the book, and she was very, you know, like she was taken back by it, and you know, she's like on this page, and I'm going, which book? What page? What? It's like one big story now. It's
yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was cool though. It's.
One of the fights that I was thinking of was, of course, the political move that Jamie makes to arrest Ned, and kills everybody except for Ned.
Yeah.
And was probably going to kill Ned,
yeah.
or at least try. Until one of Jamie's foot soldiers put a spear through Ned's thigh, which would back then probably kill him anyway. But what struck me as, I mean, it's a very pivotal moment, and I think they did a lot of work to hide the fact that Sean Bean may not be the youngest guy, and this new actor that they got to play Jamie Lannister might be pretty, but maybe isn't so great with a sword, because these are supposed to be two of the best swordsmen and sword fighters in the realm, and
yeah.
it's just a bunch of really fast cuts and nothing. It didn't feel like a fight at all.
Yeah,
but maybe everyone is actually just afraid of Sean Bean, because didn't he get in that bar brawl a while ago where he got stabbed with flipping and just went back to the bar?
Oh, I have no idea.
Like in real,
I don't follow celebrity news, so I don't know.
Yeah, no, he was at, like, I think it was probably 6 months ago or so. He was at some bar with some Italian Playboy model. And there was some scuffle outside, and he ends up getting cut by a broken bottle or something like that. And he's like, oh, I'll just go back in the bar. Like, he just didn't care, right?
Who was that?
Sean Bean.
No way!
Yeah.
Awesome. Awesome.
Look it up.
Nice. Anyway. Yeah, so what did you guys feel about that particular scene in terms of, like, the fall of Stark from the... I mean, he goes from being the Hand to being basically bleeding and dying...
Underfoot, yeah.
You know, underfoot in a matter of minutes on the show.
Yeah,
Well,
as soon as he came out, he said right away, he stood up for his family and his wife when, you know, where's my brother, Stark? Well,
yeah.
I get on my orders, my wife took him. Mm-hmm. You know, so he obviously wasn't intimidated by the Kingslayer, right? He was he wasn't afraid. So, but when they, you know, got in, and then their buddy, well, just to touch base on what you said earlier too, Joel, when one of the Lannister soldiers stabs him in the leg, Lannister knocked him out because, hey man, I'm not gonna look cool by beating Ned Stark on my own.
Plus, he's taken that away
from
me. He's probably waiting 20 years to do that.
Did have at least a shot at him.
Oh yeah, right? Definitely. So,
yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, that's what I felt too. I mean, it's definitely a nice scene for Jamie in terms of his character development.
But yeah. But what that also did too is that sets the stage maybe for later on for the fans to go, well, what might happen? You know, like, oh, they'll face off again. You know, when Ned heals or something, right? So, like, from the television and from the character, you know, you can always give hope, which I love this whole thing, because they give you hope, but then they just take it away from you.
Yeah.
at the same time.
Yeah. Yeah. J.R.R. Martin thinks hope's cute.
Yeah.
Like, oh, look, he's got some hope. Yeah. Look at that. He's like a little puppy. Oh.
You think this is going to end well, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, it's all the friendship and magic replaced by sex and violence.
Yeah.
Fantastic line. Fantastic line. Well, I mean, speaking of violence, I mean, one of the most violent parts of this entire episode was the jousting match between the Mountain and Sir Loras. And man, oh man, it just... Yeah, I... Jocelyn couldn't watch. We synced up the show. We watched it again this week. And she was like, I'm turning away. I can't watch. And I forgot that he takes that horse down with one swing.
Yeah. With this real sword.
Oh, jeez. Yeah. I mean, big sword. It's insane.
Yeah.
Really, really crazy. So, I mean, and what happens there, of course, is that he's about to kill Sir Loras in a blood rage. And the Hound steps in and actually does something, I guess, nice or chivalrous and saves Sir Loras by facing off against his older brother, Clegane. Clegane, was it?
The Cleganes, yeah.
Clegane, yeah.
Sandor and Gregor.
Yeah, yeah. I knew it was Gregor. I was trying to remember the last name. And the king actually ends up breaking it up because the two brothers are probably going to end up killing themselves because it wasn't like play fighting. Like these guys are going at each other. Like there's certainly no love between them.
Yeah. And then when the robber steps in to break it up, the Hound just stops and gets to his knee and
takes a knee and he misses him with the shot.
Yeah. The last second.
But that also shows how loyal the Hound is, right?
Mm-hmm. So. Yeah, well, loyal like a dog, right?
Yeah.
So, exactly. Yeah. The part where the Littlefinger makes the bet with Stannis.
Yeah.
And he goes, and he says, oh, too bad you won't be able to buy any friends. He goes, and when will you be having your friend?
Yeah.
And then two scenes later, he's shaving his chest. Right. Okay. Yeah. But I don't think Martin got into that too much in the book, did he?
Well, that's not, that's
Renly. Sorry. Thank you, Renly.
It's Renly, actually. And it's not in the book. I was looking over our email this week. And that's one thing that I knew we were going to talk about on the show. But one of the guys, Busy Zombie Lord from the chat room, Lou, he wrote in and asked us what we thought about that scene with Renly and Loras shaving.
Oh, okay.
It's not in the book. It's completely just put in there because HBO can do that kind of stuff.
It's HBO. Yeah.
Yeah. They have to push the borders. You know, like there's a lot of, you know, whorehouses and sex scenes and incest, so they're like, well, why not put in, you know, a gay lover scene, you know? And it just it's forced, and it's not,
it might have been a little forced. Yeah,
yeah, it's not really my thing. It wasn't, it didn't flow with the story, you know. And because I don't think Renly is gay in the book, is he?
They hint at it.
Do they?
More in the second, but, yeah, they hinted a little more in the second book, didn't they?
But it does nothing to endear you to the character or to help establish the fact that, you know, down the road he might make a play for the throne because you're like, you know, this guy doesn't have the stones or the backing to do that, right? So
yeah.
Well, yeah, but that's what Loras said though too to him. He's like, you know, I've got money.
Yeah.
You know, so I'll back you. So I don't know. We'll see.
I guess, yeah, it could be a sort of a shortcut to say, you know, this is why he would back him, not because he believes him as a leader, but because he's his lover.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. So,
You know, this is my boyfriend, so I'm going to throw some money behind it. So
Probably.
Yeah.
Oh, but the skulls. Hey, when Arya's down in the basement, you get to see the dragon skulls, and she just crawls inside of one, and it's nothing. Mm-hmm. You know, that gives you the idea of...
Oh, yeah.
What the dragons will, the potential of some of the dragons. You know,
oh my God, they're bigger than dinosaurs. Like I think mentioned dinosaurs last episode in terms of the scale, but I mean the head of one of them is huge. It's like the size of a bus.
Yeah.
And Viserys is in the bathtub with the whore last episode. And he was talking about how he would walk down the chamber room and recite the names of all the dragons, and they got bigger as the further down you went. So. Like, was she at the end of it, or is they just that they removed it from the chamber? Did they and they just put them all downstairs and destroyed them? Yeah. Or okay. Yeah.
And again, too, I mean, production costs and stuff. Maybe like, hey, we're gonna get continued, so let's maybe not go full out on this one, and you know, stuff like that too. It's hard to say.
And is that the biggest one, or is that like mid range? Or
yeah, they don't really get into that, do they? Yeah.
Right on. Well, I think we can probably call that a wrap on episode 5. We'll be moving, of course, on to episode 6 next week.
Mm-hmm.
But before we get out of the movies and video, I guess we can just jump right into what else we've been watching. And Peyton, you had a question about Netflix.
Yeah. One of my son's favorite movies is Horton Hears a Who. Now, we've watched it very regularly on Netflix. He always calls it Hort and all that stuff. As I explained earlier, episode from his birthday cake and all that fun stuff. Anyhow, it's no longer on Netflix, and it's no longer searchable on Netflix. And I was wondering if it just about Netflix's policies, like is there a certain number of views you get for a certain movie, or is it, are the movies on it permanently, or just on it for a short, like, do they have a short license for it? And also, anyone know how the studios make money from having their films on Netflix? Like, is it a pay, do they get paid for each viewing or what?
It's not pay-per-view. It's exactly, you hit it on the head when you said licensing.
Okay.
Netflix takes the money that it gets from subscribers, and it strikes up deals with either stations or production companies, producing companies, and says, okay, we want to have this movie or that movie or this much of your content. They pay them for a license fee for a certain amount of time, and then they allow that movie to be streamed for that amount of time. Okay. And that's it. It's kind of like how, like, remember how, you know how the old Turner Network television station used to run movies and stuff like that on weekends, and you'd tune in and, like, they'd be playing, like, Beverly Hills Cop, like, every 6 hours over the weekend, right? And there'd be a couple other movies in between. It'd be, like, Beverly Hills Cop, Fried Green Tomatoes, and Short Circuit, and it would just kind of, like, rotate these movies over the weekend, right?
What a horrible choice
you
just made, man.
I know. Don't
completely
shoot the
random,
messenger.
Though.
Don't shoot the message. Well, that's the thing. Like, they would have, you know, they would have, like, a late evening slot, so, like, Beverly Hills Cop. They would have, like, the afternoon fluff movie, and then they would have, like, the prime time 7 o'clock p.m. kids movie,
for
or
kids,
family-friendly,
yeah.
Right? Yeah. And that's what it is. They get a license fee, and they're allowed to stream it for so long. So Netflix works the same way. They basically just pay for whatever they can get. Because then what happens is, like, the Paramount and other production companies stand to make more money if they only let Netflix have it for a shorter period of time, and then they go to Hulu or Roku or, like, they go to other services, other streaming services, Amazon Prime streaming, for example.
So sort of how, like, it goes from theater, instead of going directly to home video, it goes pay-per-view, and then it goes to, like, hotels, and then DVD sort of thing?
Yeah, okay. And that's similar. I mean, it's a faster cycle now with Netflix, because you'll see stuff that comes out on DVD, you'll see it on Netflix, you know, shortly thereafter. Because a lot of times what happens is, especially with kids' movies, you guys watch it over and over and over again, and then they take it away. Well, what's your next move? You know, you're going to pick up the DVD the next time you see it cheap.
Well, luckily in Canada, though, you know, if you own the DVD, you're allowed to have a digital backup, so.
Yes. Yeah.
This comes in handy. So.
Yeah. Well, it's, so anyway, it's a that's basically how Netflix
works. Oh, we lost
works.
Chad. Oh, sorry.
Okay.
Sorry.
No one would have known until you pointed it out.
Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming. And the reason why I was wondering about with regard to Netflix for a limited number of views, because we were watching it so often, I wasn't sure if it was, like, you know, almost like you're hitting the review button on a website ad, and you're racking up the views on your website, you know.
Oh, I see.
And I was sure if they thought it was something like that, and they just axed us from it, or if we just couldn't find it. So, anyway, yeah. So is that and earlier you mentioned you know, Short Circuit and other cheesy movies from a bygone era. And the other day I was flicking the channels, and King Ralph was on.
Or, is that the John Goodman one?
That's the John Goodman one where the entire royal family dies in some sort of electrical accident, and then he's the last living royal heir, so they bring him over, and, you know, hilarity ensues.
Yeah.
Anyway, I really enjoyed that movie. I know, like, on IMDb, it only gets like a 4.5 or something at a 10 stars, but I just think it's from, you know, time when movies were pretty simple, and it's just, you know, here's your everyday Joe, and here's the situation, the good guy wins, and, you know, bad guy gets it, and it's just, you know, a happy-go-lucky sort of film, and, you know, John Goodman's, you know,
he's a good actor. I really enjoy him in a lot of stuff. He's in Community, and he does a fantastic job as a kind of a foil. He does kind of like he's a contradicting community college principal or something like that on the show. And he does it. He plays a villain, and he's kind of like, he's like a suit. Like, he's got that, like, Men in Black kind of feel going, and he's really quite funny. He's getting up there, though, and he's still a big man. He's kind of the kind of thing that kind of makes you concerned for his health, you know, because you're looking at him like, dude, you don't look too good. You look it's getting a lot harder to carry that weight around, you know.
He was great in Barton Fink. There's a great scene when the building's on fire and he's standing all backlit and stuff. He's pretty badass. So.
Nice. Chad, do you remember King Ralph with John Goodman?
Yeah,
that's what Peyton watched last week.
Oh, nice!
Yeah,
right,
we're just on Vision on TV. So anyway,
Vision. You know what? I watched for the very first time, and ever. Probably about 2-3 months ago was The Big Lebowski.
Yeah.
I'd never seen that before, and I finally got to see it, and that was, I really enjoyed that. I thought that was good.
Yeah, it don't matter to Jesus. It don't matter to him.
the Coen brothers, they're nuts, man.
They really are funny.
Yeah. Oh, what was the... I saw a Coen brothers movie recently. It was in theaters, and it had John Malkovich in it. And it was...
Burn After Reading, is it?
Yes!
Yeah,
that was horrible.
Yes, it was.
I was not impressed at all. I guess you have to be a Coen brothers fan to really understand that movie, but I thought it was just tripe. I'm like not impressed.
Or Art Thou, but...
Oh, that is a great movie.
Yeah, that's, I guess, different altogether again.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you get some really classic material to work with there, right?
That's true, yeah.
And there's also one of the earlier films, Miller's Crossing.
I haven't seen that one.
It's it's a pretty old film at this point, but it's got a couple pretty hard scenes. One scene, there's a guy on his knees begging for a life. He's like, have a heart. And he's like, what heart? And it's like, pop, pop. But there's another scene, a guy, it's one of the best special effects shots, but you don't actually see anything because I think it's in silhouette. But he unloads on a guy's face with the blunt end of a shovel. And the guy's hands come up to his face, and when he moves his hands out of the way, it's like someone just took a bucket of liquid and just spills it on the ground and just poof everywhere, right? He just opens this guy's face right up, and he's just like, right? It's crazy. Anyway.
That was one of the things that caught me on Burn After Reading. There's a scene where John Malkovich goes after somebody in the street.
Yeah.
And I want to say it's with an axe or a monkey wrench.
It's a hatchet.
It's a hatchet.
Yeah.
So I don't know how they did it. I mean, they might have. This might be a really good example of CG stuff doing its job correctly, because it felt real. Like a tingle went up my spine, because you're the view that you have is like you're two cops, I think, in a car, and you're staking this guy's place out, and he chases the victim out the front door, and the victim turns around just in time to get the hatchet in the face, and right after that, you know, Malkovich reels back and there's this big whip of blood, and the dude that was the victim drops like a sack of potatoes. Like it is viscerally real how fast everything on his body just stops moving.
It's all one shot, isn't it?
Yeah, like, and he just falls.
There's no cutaway or any of that stuff.
Yeah.
But
what happens is he falls under, like from your view as the driver, he falls under the bumper of the car, so you can't see the actual victim on the ground, but you can see Malkovich hitting what is, you know, obviously like a dummy filled with blood, you know, on the ground, and he just wails on it. And it is the one of the most
isn't he in his bathrobe?
I've ever seen. Yes, like yes.
And a wife beater, right? And
absolutely. Yeah, he's an actor that I don't always enjoy, Malkovich.
Oh no, yeah.
No, he's not always my cup of tea. So, well, speaking of violence, which tends to be a theme on the Citadel Cafe, Chad, what have you been watching?
Kick Ass.
Nice.
It's a fun film.
Man, I'd missed it, you know, when it came out. I you know, kind of missed it and got pushed to the side. And yeah, I'll watch that. And eventually I just, you know, never got a chance to watch it, to see it. And so one night home alone, downloaded off iTunes on the Apple TV. Are you guys there?
Yep. Oh, yeah, we're here.
Okay. Every time I hear dead air now, I'm all like, oh, internet. So, I went on to iTunes, and it was available for rent, and I watched it. It was fun. It was really cool. I mean, what dad shoots his daughter, though?
Nick Cage.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, you know, he got shot, but I was thinking to myself, you know, like, that's pretty disturbing that Nicolas Cage can, you know, shoot his daughter and stuff. But then it got me thinking about Star Wars for whatever reason, and Anakin Skywalker, like, basically, you know, commits questionable genocide against a tribe of sand people, women and children included, because, you know, they kidnapped his mom and killed his mom. So
yeah.
And then cries about it, and, you know, his wife still loves him for it. You know, so, okay, I guess it's acceptable, you know, in those family moments, you know, buy your daughter a butterfly knife and teach her how to use it. And it's pretty cool. The effects were pretty cheap in the sense, you know, when people are getting stabbed and the knife goes through them and comes out their chest and you're like, wow, that was really badly done.
Yeah.
But there was other scenes. It was fun. But I loved the point where he tried to stop the two guys from stealing the car. They stabbed him.
Yeah.
And then he got hit by the car.
Yeah. And that guy totally buys it halfway through the film.
Yeah.
The guy drives the car. Yeah.
Yeah. The thing that caught me was the mouth on the 13-year-old.
Yeah.
That really kind of, I mean, it sold the movie to me. Like that's one of the things that I found so entertaining was not only just the violence, but the stuff that she was going to say. You're just like, I have to watch the rest of this because I have to know what else she says.
Yeah.
You know, she was probably the best part of that.
The scene where the girlfriend, she's like, if I knew Kick-Ass right now, I would fuck the shit out of him right now. Really?
Yeah. Let's go see the Sandra Bullock movie.
Yeah.
But did you guys get the feeling that they cut a lot of, like, it felt like they cut some of the movie out though?
Oh yeah.
They really constrained the time felt really constrained and forced almost at points.
Yeah, well, I think, correct me if I'm wrong, Peyton, it was a comic book first.
Yeah, it was a comic book by Mark Miller and as a writer, and it was drawn by John Romita Jr. And beautiful, beautiful artwork. And he did a big stint on Spider-Man, a bunch of other stuff. Really, if you're looking for a good read, you know, check out any of his stuff. He did a bit on the Eternals for a while there too. Anyway, yeah, so it was good comic, and I think they're working on a sequel. I'm not sure if the comic is going to be the sequel or if the film is going to be a sequel, but there's some talk of doing.
I think it's on. I think I saw on IMDb. I put in Kick-Ass, and it came up Kick-Ass 2.
Yeah, because you know the entire Red Mist thing and all that fun stuff.
Yeah.
And I think one thing I'll enjoy about the film is Nick Cage being Nick Cage, and the Big Daddy like running through that warehouse is pretty sweet.
Yes. Sorry, Joel.
There's a lot of really good action in it, a lot of good fighting, and it kind of takes a moment to make fun of superhero movies, but it also kind of remains like, no, this is what would happen. You would get the tar kicked out of you.
Yeah.
You would not. This would not be a fun job, you know?
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. Well, I actually went kind of on the lighter side of life this week with the other stuff that I was watching beyond Game of Thrones. I actually got into Triangulation, which is a podcast, a video podcast put out by the Twit Network. And it was episode 40 on February 15th. They interviewed Bram Cohen, who happens to be the creator of BitTorrent. And I mean, I'm sure with a lot of people and with a lot of our listeners that you say BitTorrent and a lot of people just think, pirating. And I mean, that's how I get my TV shows. And it's a downloadable, or it's a means of downloading. And what's really cool about it is, I mean, it's allowed companies like Blizzard to be able to update their content. It is a really efficient way of downloading something. So, I mean, if you're not familiar, as you're downloading this file that you're getting, you're also uploading that file. Mm-hmm. To other peers. And so it allows you to download a rather large file quite quickly. So he announced on Triangulation that he is now working on and has a public beta of BitTorrent Live, which works the same sort of principle, but with streaming. So instead of bits of a file, it's bits of bandwidth. So I could, in theory, use BitTorrent Live to stream the show. And as more and more people started tuning in, that bandwidth would then get shared over those audience members,
nice.
Which then, if you tune in and say you've got a low internet connection, and somebody else has a very fast internet connection, then it all starts to sort of balance out so that the more people tuning in, you could have a very high quality video feed, but people with low bandwidth would be able to watch it because everybody else would be able to do the heavy lifting. It's a really interesting concept. So I have it bookmarked here to sign up for an account just to test it out from time to time. I might do it on some of the commissions I'm doing just to kind of see how it works.
I was just thinking that could also have great implications for education.
Oh yes, no agreed.
If you've got an instructor trying to give an online workshop, I know right now here in Halifax you've got that transit strike. And there are, my wife works at one of the universities here in town, and she said that she's aware of at least 6 students that had to drop out of school because they missed so many classes because of this transit strike. So if you have something like this set up, there's no reason that an instructor can't set up their laptop, and then these kids can take their courses from home in the interim, right? So
there's no reason now. I mean, we do it with Ustream, and there's Justin TV. There's lots of opportunity to
part of the issue, I think, with some of the universities and stuff is it's all unionized, so you can't do something that steps on someone else's toes. So.
I understand. Yeah. A lot of hoops to jump through and stuff like that. But if you're interested at all, Triangulation can be found at twit.tv/show/triangulation. This was episode 40. There's lots of other episodes. It's basically just Tom Merritt and Leo Laporte interviewing really really interesting, really smart people. And Bram Cohen says quite a bit about the television industry and how he wants to try and revolutionize. And I think this is a big step, if this catches on and they can get it right, to changing the way that television is delivered to people, right? Yeah. So it's really interesting. And then on the flip side, I've been also watching a lot of Netflix this week because both The Family Guy and Futurama are on Netflix. We mentioned Family Guy last week, but this week I've been watching Futurama. And there's something about The Family Guy that I like, but I can only watch one episode at a time.
Yeah.
You know, it's so 110% in your face all the time. You get kind of desensitized, and then it becomes not as funny.
And I think also a big part of Family Guy is its audio. If you watch an episode of The Family Guy with the audio turned off, you're watching about, I'd say, 70% reused animation either from other episodes or just cycled stuff, you know? It's pretty funny.
Yeah. It's very limited, and it's very much a talk show. You're right.
Yeah.
You're right. But with Futurama, there's some interesting visual gags. And what I like about Futurama, because I remember watching it, but it's been so long, I don't remember, you know, hardly any of it. I know who the characters are. I know kind of what their personalities are. But the story points, I've completely kind of refreshed to now. And the subtle humor and the adult jokes that they put in there are so good and so clever. And it's one of those things where, you know, it happens and then it cuts to the next scene. And you're just like, that's what I thought it was. That's pretty good, you know? And it's not one of those things where it's shock value. You know, like Stewie says stuff to shock the crap out of you and make you think, oh my God, they just said that on TV. Yeah. Now, I do have a bit of a disconnect with Family Guy watching it on Netflix, because when you're watching it on a home video of any kind, it doesn't feel as racy as when you're watching it broadcast on television. You know, I don't know why. But the other thing is about Family Guy, like you said, Peyton, was the quality. Although I've got to say, there's some parts of Futurama that are really drawn poorly, and it makes you kind of wake up and say, wow, like this is a very funny show. I still like it, but there's every now and again you'll see something, you know, a character pose or some drawing of their face, and like the lines are, there's tangents, or there's lines are kind of being not really drawn properly and squiggly or doesn't follow the form. And you're just like, it's really strange, because it's like, this is the Simpsons style. Like, this is Matt Groening's style. I don't know how you can screw it up. You know, it's a very effective, very simple style, and there's a lot of ways that they kind of drop it. But some things about Futurama, like the heads in the jars. I watched this one recently where Pamela Anderson was a head in a jar on top of somebody else's shoulders, and oh my God, it was just priceless. And the cool thing about it is that they get all the actors to do their little bit voices. Like,
yes,
it was really Pamela Anderson. It was really Leonard Nimoy. It was really a couple of other people they had in heads in jars. It was great.
As opposed to South Park, where they'll just like impersonate them badly because they hate working with actors, period.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Matt Damon.
Yeah. So I'm really enjoying Futurama. I've been watching, you know, one or two episodes every, you know, lunchtime or dinner break, whenever I get a chance. It's nice to watch it without the commercials too, because it's just a little 22-minute sit down for one episode, which has been great.
But one of the big things I remember about Futurama is, like, I haven't watched it in years, was they went to this, like, what's the lead character's name again on Futurama?
Starts with an F. Flick? Flash?
Fry,
thank you.
Fry. he wanted to do everything he's always ever wanted to do. And then they go to the dinosaur feeding zoo.
Yeah.
Because they've done it. So then he puts the money into the machine, and it pops this, like, sheep, and he holds it up for this Tyrannosaurus Rex to eat, and the Tyrannosaurus, like, takes his hands off. So the next scene is he goes into, like, new hand store, right? Because it's the future, right? So he's like, awesome. And then you can just see that subtle line right at his wrists, where it's a different color, his hands and his arms, just a little tone different. And he looks at them and he goes, I'm going to try these bad boys out tonight.
boy.
Like you said, Joel, did he just say that? Because it was the scene, right?
Yeah.
Did he just say that?
Yeah, I think one of my favorite characters who's not in it a lot right now is Zoidberg.
Oh, yeah.
yeah. Some of the stuff that he says is pretty bang on. Right on. Well, I guess we can move on to our reading section. Peyton, what's been happening in the book world for you this week?
More of late, there's been kids' books. Nighttime reading for my son.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, there's a couple books that I found at local store here. And we, Oliver Jeffries is the author and illustrator, and he has these great picture books for kids. And a very done in a very painterly style, watercolors. And we have two books of his. He has a bunch in the series, but one's called How to Catch a Star, and the other one is The Way Back Home. And The Way Back Home is awesome. But this boy who comes home one day and puts his boat away and stuff in his closet, and inside of his closet is an airplane. So he takes it out for a spin, and it goes higher and higher and crashes on the moon because he runs out of gas. And while he's there, there's an alien who crash lands on the moon because his plane's broke, so they got to find a way to fix each other's machines to get home. And anyway,
oh, cool.
It's a very, very cute little story. And yeah, there's one spot where they hear noises in the dark and they envision these monsters. And I didn't want to scare the boy with them, so we call them moon sharks. So whenever he sees these, like, sharks, they look nothing like sharks except for the fact that these giant mouths that are about to eat these kids, right? And he's like, sharks! Because he has a little toy shark, and he thinks sharks are awesome. So yeah, so I've been reading those two books pretty regularly, and I might get a couple of the books from the series if I can. And then I also found another book at the library by a guy named Bob Stakes.
Okay.
And and it's called Look a Book, and it's one of those like find and seek sort of things. And
okay,
at the bottom of the book, they say, find a piece of toast, and there's like 100 characters on the page. You got to find the one with the toast on it and stuff. But it's kind of neat because again, the boy's but he just turned two, but you say find a seagull, and his finger goes right to the seagull, and you just point different objects, and he'll just seek him out. So it's nice to sit down and with the boy on your lap and. Whoop. And break stuff like that. Anyway.
Yeah. Actually, anyway. I can see that being not far from the truth with Ewan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He is the mountain.
So. Yes, exactly. Oh, my God. We have to get him a T-shirt.
Yeah.
With the mountain helmet on it.
Oh, yeah. I'll go to the hound for Halloween and get him to go as the mountain.
Yes.
There we go.
Fantastic. Love it. Love it.
Nerf swords for them. There's a store here that's a great toy store in the mall here. And I go in there all the time just to see like the hobby stuff. They have like the little gas powered radio control cars, and they have model boats and like a wall of board games and all the toys for little kids. And you just walk through, right? And just, my nephew there, I'm going to buy him a toy for his birthday, the perfect spot. So at the very back, they have all like the plastic like Viking helmets with the horns and the foam swords and the foam shields and the plastic armor. It's really cool. And I've when you were a kid, this is exactly the stuff you'd want to do. And it's just like a little foam broadsword and a foam shield. And it looks like bang on.
Nice. My father used to make our swords out of 2x4s.
Oh yeah, me too, man. I used to make my own stuff like that. I think we all did at one point, but definitely. Used hockey sticks with extra tape and stuff like that, and tape stuff on and nail it and screw it on. And in your mind, it looks like a real one.
it felt real when it got across the shins.
Or the head or the, it broke across the tree. Why didn't the tree cut like on the movie?
Nice. Take this big swing at a tree and you get like vibrations up your arms and there's a little chink in the bark on the tree. It's like, damn it.
Oh, it's like that preview for Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Killer. Did you see that yet?
I heard of it. I haven't watched it yet.
Takes the axe to the tree and like he destroys like the axe goes through like 6 inches of the tree, and then all of a sudden the tree explodes in slow motion. It's so bad. Like, it's the worst CG. Like, if you're gonna slow CG down, it better be perfect.
Yeah. Oh, I think that movie is supposed to be pretty campy.
Okay. Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Killer. Yeah.
I don't know. I'll probably check it out. I'm looking forward to that Iron in the Sky movie too. That saw more trailers from that. Is it Iron Sky? Iron in the Sky? It's the Nazis on the dark side of the moon. We've talked about it before.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. I mean, there was another trailer that came out for that, and that was really cool.
What?
Yeah. Oh, Chad. I'll fill you in after the show.
Okay.
Yeah. I do want to get into a couple of things that I've been reading. Last week, we touched on the Marvel versus Ghost Rider creator, and one of my co-hosts on the Comics Coast to Coast podcast, Denver Brubaker, passed on a link to me on comicbookresources.com, And it was a very good read. It was an interview that Comic Book Resources did with two people from Marvel, someone from legal, someone from PR, and they weren't condescending and they weren't really defensive. They were just very matter of fact, and they said, look, straight up, ask all the questions you want. There are going to be some where we can't go into detail because it's an ongoing litigation, and it was just, we can't, you know, and that was understood. So they basically got as much information as they could. I mean, the lawsuit had been going on since 2007, and they went into a lot of detail about all these things, how they haven't ripped all of the, you know, association away from the creator. They're like, no, if you want to go to conventions and sign books for people, you can totally do that. You're not allowed to sell the book. You know, you can sell your signature on that book, but you can't have the book or the t-shirt to sell. So they were kind of poo-pooing a lot of the internet stuff. And they also said very blatantly that they were not looking to revisit their policies on creator, you know, rights or their creator properties at this time, which is kind of their legal way of saying, like, look, if you're at a con and you're drawing Marvel stuff, don't worry. Like, we're not going to be changing our current policy, which is tolerance and not encouragement, but, like, you know, we like the free promotion that you're giving us, so we're not going to, you know, go after you. So it was a very, very good read. We're probably going to be covering a little bit more on Comics Coast to Coast when we get a chance, but it's so far it was something that really kind of answered a lot of questions that I had, because I'm not familiar enough with Marvel and their dealings with the guy that made Ghost Rider. So that was good. And unfortunately, I finished The Perfect Bait by Bobby Chu, which was something that I had started on last episode and said that I would get back to everybody on my review on it. And I unfortunately have to tell everybody that's out there as a comic person or an art person or possibly looking for this book, don't buy it. It is not a book. It is a glorified blog post. It is 202 pages on the phone, and these are small pages on the iPhone. So this is something that could have been a blog post or a series of blog posts, a series of, you know, video lectures that he could have put up on his website, something. It's roughly 2 hours on the audio, if you listen to it as an audiobook, which, again, by audiobook standards is very short. It was also very cheap. Like, I mean, it was $10 compared to an audiobook that would normally cost $50. However, it just wasn't really, you know, up to snuff. It was read by Bobby Chu. Like, I mentioned a bunch of these, you know, shortcomings last week. And yes, there are some awesome tips in it. There are some insights into freelancing and into business and being in business for yourself. Some things I knew, some things I didn't know. But that's just a matter of, you know, these are the kind of conversations that I have when I go to network meetings here in the city. And when Peyton and I sit down and talk about our businesses, those are the kind of things that I learn from those conversations. And I didn't need a book to tell me that, because a lot of it was common sense. And it's just, it gets too much into being a self-help book. It gets into too much of trying to motivate you to
be... You can do it.
Exactly. It really is like that. It really does beat you over the head about, get excited, be a better you. And you're just like, did you really just say that?
It's like that little girl commercial, the stuff where she's screaming into the, I like myself.
Yes, exactly. it really is a little bit too condescending in that way. And I didn't like that. Now, again, I'm coming at it from a point of being a professional artist. And as you mentioned last week, Peyton, it was probably written for more students in mind. But there's a big part of this book that rubbed me the wrong way. And it wasn't until I had to go back and look. Like, I had to go back and read parts of the book after I had finished to kind of really put a handle on it. So I've got a passage here that I'm going to read, and it really illustrates the point that Bobby Chu, I feel, in my opinion, missed. And he says, at this point of struggle in my career, I asked one of my favorite artists, Steven Silver, who is now one of my best friends, for some advice. Steven talked to me for over an hour, even though we didn't know each other, and he convinced me that I could become a successful artist. At the end of our conversation, I told him how much his advice meant to me, how much it changed me, and asked what I could do to repay him. And he said, when you come to a point in your career when you feel that you can give back, start giving back. Do this for somebody else, and we'll call it even. So, first off, it's kind of amazing that Steve Silver managed to convince Bobby Chu that he's going to be a successful artist in about 60 minutes, which I thought was a little bit too straight up. However, here's the thing. Do you think Bobby Chu paid Steve Silver for that conversation? No. Mm. Steve Silver did it out of the kindness of his heart. He saw an artist that was struggling, and he says, oh, dude, I've been there. Chin up. Here's a bunch of advice. Here's what I did. Take what you want from it. Make it your own. Go do your thing. Go draw. Go have fun. And you'll get there eventually. What Bobby Chu has done is said, oh, I've got all this information. It's now time for me to start giving back. And he didn't. He's selling back. He is saying, I am a successful artist. I have information for you. Give me $14, now on sale for $10, and I will give that information to you, or I will sell that information to you. And it's nothing that you couldn't learn from basically following these people online. So if you're out there and you want to, be a better artist, go find the artists that you like and follow them on Twitter. Read their blog posts. Don't just read their comics and read their artwork. You know, find out more about them. Find out more about what they're doing. And you're probably going to be able to find an artist or befriend an artist that is going to be kind enough to give you some advice. I emailed Scott Johnson last week and asked him about a career move that I'm considering to make, and he wrote me back. He didn't charge me for it. And I think that if Bobby Chu had done this in a way that was a series of posts or a series of lectures, like I said, do you understand how much internet clout, positive things people would be saying about this guy, and how many teachers and instructors would be in front of their classes saying, you have to go to this site and check out Bobby Chu. This is a successful production designer for Disney and multiple other movies, and he is just verbal diarrhea about all the great things about how he got to where he is. Go read it, you know? And he would have so much of a positive following for doing that. And I have to say, like, I love his work. I think he's a beautiful painter. I'm not judging anything about his success or anything like that. I am just coming down hard on this book, and I think it was a bad move. And I've got a bad taste in my mouth after spending $10 on something that really should have been out there on the internet for free, or, you know, even like a wall to entry, like subscribe to my newsletter via my website. So therefore I have your email address, and I know kind of like, you know, that there are people that are out there that are part of this community, you know, put up some sort of wall where you have to join, or you have to, you know, become part of the forums or on his site or something to get this information. Like, I can understand something like that, but not charging $10 for it on an iPhone app. I thought that was a little bit too much. So yeah, that's soapbox is now kicked aside. I can come down and just, you know better the next time that, you know, Bobby Chu puts out a book. And that's the thing, like, you know, when you're moving forward, it now has that, ooh, do I trust this person with another $10 of my money?
Yeah, man.
You know, exactly. Like it becomes a little bit sketchy like that. So, and I can actually transition right into some music and what we've been listening to, because I have a positive thing that is the exact opposite. One of the things that has been filling my ear holes this week has been a podcast called Making Comics. Victory! Victory! Making Comics with Jason Brubaker and Daniel Liesk. I think I'm pronouncing that right. He's German. And they do remindblog.com and wormsworldsaga.com, or wormworldsaga, no S, .com. And they do this Making Comics podcast. It's got nothing to do with the Scott McCloud book of the same name. But both these guys are positive comic creators. They are interviewing really cool people in the industry, and they are talking to them candidly, and these people are being real. And in one podcast, which is free, I got all the information and more that was already in the Bobby Chu book. So I was like, all right, you know, these guys are obviously doing it right. And it doesn't smack of self-help and effort and spiritual. They actually make fun of some of the NPR radio stuff where they get like, well, hello and welcome to NPR radio. And they did a spoof of welcome to Making Comics. We're here to make you feel good about your creation. And then he cracks up and he can't keep it up. He's like, I'm sorry. I can't go on like this. And they go back to it. So it's really worth checking out if you're into comics. They interview some really cool creators. I think episode 6 has got Scotty Young. Peyton, you'll love it. It's a really good podcast. The most recent one I listened to was Doug Tenaple, who is the creator of Earthworm Jim, and several other graphic novels since. And he speaks very candidly about a lot of things, everything from his faith to, you know, his artwork and career in Hollywood and what it means when you've got something like Earthworm Jim, and then what you're doing when Earthworm Jim is now a figment of everybody's, you know, memory because it's been so long. So it's definitely some really cool stuff. Chad, what's been happening with your listing pleasure this week?
Nothing new really, but I want to say I said to you guys last week that I thought that the Adele concert was on the Royal from Royal Albert Hall was on iTunes, and it is not on iTunes. No, it is
denied.
Yes, exactly. It is available for Blu-ray and DVD, and I purchased the Blu-ray add to my collection. So I haven't watched it yet. Hopefully, maybe next week, because this weekend is pretty much spoken for. And my wife's busy tomorrow night after work, so we'll put that off for future engagement, and I'll review it for a music section on a future podcast.
Actually, yeah, that'd be really cool because I really like Adele, and I'd love to hear, you know, what your thoughts on the concert, because I don't know if I've never purchased a DVD concert. You know,
I have a couple of them, but yeah, I like them. I have the AC/DC live at Doddington, which is really cool. I have U2's. Which U2 one do I have? I forget. I think it's the Joshua Tree or. Yeah, maybe it was the Joshua Tree one where they were making that, and it's from the 80s, but it's pretty good. My dad has Fleetwood Mac's The Chain, I think. That's really good. And a couple would, but they can be really good on a good system, you know. It's fun to have those ones on if it's done well. It's fun. I got to say.
I had a chance to listen to the Adele her performance at the Grammys last week.
Okay.
I missed it on the night of, but I saw it later on YouTube. And she, there is a slight difference in the quality of her voice since her surgery. Have you noticed that?
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. Just a little bit of a. She can't quite hold the. Doesn't have the same power, I guess. I guess maybe she's still recovering, or she learned to.
Yeah.
To control it more.
Yeah.
Yes,
well, she might. She also might be under some instruction to not, you know, push her luck too much.
That's true, too,
at first, you know, give her a year of recovery. Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Right on. All right, well, this would be the point in the show where we would throw in some email. We don't actually have any this week, but I thought I would throw it straight at Peyton and say that this week's email is brought to you by Cardboard Treehouse Animation and Illustration. You can find everything about Cardboard Treehouse at cardboardtreehouse.com. But I thought it would be a great opportunity for Peyton to tell a little bit about what he does at Cardboard Treehouse. So what's the deal, man? You mentioned that you've got two infographics up.
Yeah, I do animation and illustration, as well as paper craft. And the overall idea is to make animation accessible for smaller businesses to individuals. You know, so it's not just the playground of television production studios to have animated films or anything like that. You know, for the comparable cost of having a pretty good radio campaign, you can have yourself an animation video for whatnot, you know, wedding proposals or whatever you want. So
right on.
Anyway, it could be kind of fun. And I do stop motion and flash. And some more recently, I just put a couple infographics up on my website that the clients had posted online. So once the work is out in the public eye, I'm able to repost it. So there it is. So right now it's on my blog. I'm currently trying to get a new video service thing working on my website. I'm having some difficulty figuring out how to make that work particularly well. But anyway, so as it stands right now, my animation is spread a little bit over the website itself. So anyway, the website's constantly under development. So
and you have a link from your website to your YouTube channel?
That's right. Yeah.
And that's where you put a lot of the work too?
Yeah, as either on the YouTube channel directly posted by myself, or in the cases of these infographics are posted by the company that I've done the work with. And they did all the audio for it, as well as script development, and I did all the visuals.
Okay.
So they posted it on their website and on their YouTube channel. So I just favorited it on mine. So there's some samples of the stuff there.
Yeah, and that makes sense because I mean they're contracting you, so they still own the material. And
yeah, they own the material and stuff. Yeah. So
cool. Right on.
That's all good. So yeah, and so that's what I do.
Fantastic. Everybody should go check out cardboardtreehouse.com. And if you happen to know anybody that's in kind of a small business world that might be looking for some infographics or some animation, then drop Peyton a line. Might be able to help you out.
Yeah.
So yeah, if you'd like to send an email, you can send it to thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. If you want to send a voicemail, you can do the same thing in MP3 format. Please keep MP3 stuff to 1 minute if at all possible. Tell Carrie I said hi. If you want to write the show, please try to keep it short and concise. If it's got a lot of good content, we'll still probably read it on the show, but we will... edit down stuff that's a little bit too long. One of the things that I do want to give a shout out to, of course, like I mentioned earlier, is that Lou, Busy Zombie Lord, who is no longer in the chat, I think he left, he wrote in a letter, but because we were already going to talk about it on the Winter is Coming countdown section, I thought it was just easier to just touch on the topic there rather than kind of read the email in two different places. So with that, we will move on to our last section, the Internet Minute. And I have a doozy that I'm going to start off with just to kind of keep the ball rolling here. And it is an Iron Man costume from some unknown guy from the Nandesu Con in 2010. And it's crazy. The guy has got LEDs in both the visor and the chest lights in his hands, but he can also close the visor via mechanics.
Oh, nice.
It is ridiculous. You know, like he has this guy that's interviewing him and has got the camera on him, and he's just kind of like, oh, do it again. And he hits the button and the visor comes down and the lights come on. And then he hits his button again and his head goes up. And I don't know what button is hitting. I'm assuming it's something on his wrist or on his thigh, or like he's got a button somewhere else on the costume, and it's bloody brilliant.
Nice.
You know, it's such a good costume. So we'll have that linked in the show notes.
And I think the costume itself is also made from recycled materials.
Yes. Yeah, he did say that. Yeah, he said that it's all recycled plastic. I don't know what he did, melt it down or whatever. But there is some fantastic stuff out there with prop making and costumes and stuff at cons. One of my favorite things about HellCon was all the cool costumes.
Yeah.
So, Peyton, what do you have for a pick this week?
Just a follow-up to the Order of the Stick.
You bastard.
Sorry, man. It's just, you know, I just think it's interesting, you know, just to note that
the
funding time frame for that particular Kickstarter project has elapsed, and he has garnered 2,172% of funding for his initial goal of $57,000. So he's now sitting at $1,254,120.
Wow.
Yeah. So I think like maybe a quarter of that or more is probably going to be for postage.
Oh my God! Can you imagine?
Yeah.
Well, so let's just do the math here real quick. You can keep talking about it while I whip out the trusty iPhone.
I thought you were going to say calculator on your desktop. You know, one of those big ones. But no, give us some sounds in the back.
This is actually faster. 1,254, 120, no change, times 0.08 equals, that's $100,000 in fees to Kickstarter and Amazon.
Nice.
Yeah, oh, wow. Yeah.
That's, and that, my friends, is why they have the site.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah. Yeah, they're saying it is the second most funded pledge to complete a Kickstarter drive ever. It's the third Kickstarter project in history to reach $1 million. And it's the most funded creative work in Kickstarter history in any medium ever.
Wow.
And it's also the most funded project by a single person rather than a company.
Yep.
And et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 14.
How much are we wanting this guy to actually drop the ball?
I
think it's great. Yeah. I mean, it's not my kind of comic, but I think it's good for comicdom in general. I think that with this much news, that means everybody now knows, everybody on the internet now knows that Kickstarter can quite successfully be used to make, you know, your favorite comic book a reality. And what has to be made clear is that he didn't make, you know, $1 million here.
No.
He raised $1 million. I mean, his salary is going to be very... You know, it's going to be modest because as he set it out, and he does set it out very clearly, like, look, this is what I'm going to be spending the money on.
Yeah.
And it's basically just everybody's buying magnets and books. So he's going to be sending a lot of people, you know, magnets and books. And, I mean, he's probably going to be able to afford some people to help him out with that. Or, I mean, at the very least, pay himself. And, I mean, as an independent artist, you know, you've spent all this time, you know, creating this book, and now you get to sit there and mail it out to people. You know, small price to pay for being successful.
I mean, he's got 15,000 people backing him, 14,952 people backing him. So
wow, that's incredible.
That's a lot of stamp licking.
Yeah, I wonder.
Shades of Seinfeld coming in, where she had to lick all the envelopes for
she's
the.
Gone?
She's gone. Yeah, she's gone.
Ooh.
Too anyway. Funny. And Chad, so what about you?
Me, sorry. I driving home from work the other day on listening to CBC Radio, I heard the show done by Terry O'Reilly. He usually does The Age of Persuasion, and about advertising and how it influences us in our everyday lives. But he started this other show, or I'm not really sure what's going on, but it's got another one he does now. It's called Under the Influence. And it's another it's a radio show for CBC Radio, but it's offered in iTunes under the podcast section as well. And you can listen to it. And the particular episode that I listened to was The Marketing Genius of Steve Jobs. And it started right at the beginning and talks about Steve Jobs' heroes like Edwin Land. Sorry, guys who inspired him. Edwin Land, the guy who invented the Polaroid and what he did to get going. And then, you know, it says, you know, in just 56 short years on this planet, Steve Jobs managed to revolutionize six industries: personal computers, animated movies, music, phones, computing, and digital publishing. You know, so like the impact that this guy had. But it's, you know, he talked about the things that he wanted to do. And like, for instance, back in the 80s or 70s or 81, sorry, Steve Jobs took out a whole page article in the Wall Street Journal, and it basically, you know, welcomed IBM to the marketplace. Seriously, welcome to the most exciting and important marketplace since the computer revolution began 35 years ago. He basically he let IBM knew where they stood by letting them know that, hey, we were here first and we've already established all this stuff, and thanks for coming in and helping us out. Wow. Even though everybody thought it was, you know, IBM was it, right? But mm-hmm. No, and this is in the Wall Street Journal, for God's sake. Everybody read that back then, right?
Yeah.
Talking about
everybody still reads it now in that industry.
Yeah, and the 1984 Super Bowl ad, which all Super Bowl commercials are basically all like the big like storyline ones that are like minutes long.
Mm-hmm.
They can pretty much trace them back to 1984 of Apple launching their Apple II computer.
Yeah.
And it was done, you know, during the Super Bowl. And one of his first keynote addresses, and this podcast, or I guess this radio show, basically does the timeline, and they've got a link to their website on the CBC website of basically a little synopsis of the whole thing. And everything that Terry O'Reilly's talking about, the YouTube videos are all accompanied on the website. So we'll have the link in the show notes, but there's a link to the 1983 Apple keynote about the 1984 thing. And Terry O'Reilly breaks it right down, because he's like, Terry O'Reilly himself has been around for years and goes through Next Computers, talks about John Lasseter and how when they got Pixar, they said, you know, they needed to hone their skills before they made Toy Story. And then they talked about like the Listerine commercials back in 1994. And I'm like, Listerine commercials? Oh my God.
I remember those, yeah.
Yeah, and he's shooting the arrows. He's like Robin Hood in the woods. And like that was all them making stuff. Exactly, man.
I remember those too.
Yeah, so and that's where that started. And then it just keeps going. Think different, where that came from, and how Steve Jobs one day when nobody was around discovered this guy, Jonathan Ive, languishing in the basement of some building. Jonathan Ive languishing in the basement of some building, yeah. Who becomes like one of the most influential guys for computers. Like,
yeah, design-wise, yeah. No, he's a really, really stoic designer in that world. Have you read or have you any inclination to read the Steve Jobs biography that just came out?
Totally thinking about it, and after this I might actually jump into that. I really want to.
I was waiting for all the hype to die down, but I think it's on my list of things to pick
exactly,
up when I have a
hype.
Window for nonfiction.
I can tell you how it ends.
Oh, jeez.
Oh, blindsided.
Oh, jeez.
I did not see that coming.
All right. Well, since we're
talking... Don't come back, man. Don't come back.
Since we're talking about Steve Jobs and Apple, I think it's only fitting that I roll into the iTunes reviews for the Citadel Cafe. It's one of the best ways for our podcast to reach new listeners. And if you like the show, give us a rating, leave us a review, and we might share your thoughts on the next episode, just like this little tidbit from Postman. Sounds like either a wrestling name or like a superhero name or some sort of like alias.
Or a Kevin Costner movie.
Yeah,
so, I was going to say a fan of Kevin Costner.
So Postman says, excellent podcast, fellows. I enjoy the mix of humor, criticism, and information. It always seems like the podcast leaves you wanting more. Fantastic. He left us a 5-star review. Thank you very much, Postman. Deliver the letter. The sooner the better. It's all very good. Yeah. No, I went there. I did. So thanks very much. And if you'd like to leave us a review, please do so. It is a great way for the show to spread around the interwebs and get known. So yeah, it's all good. That's it. That's the end of this episode for the Citadel Cafe. As I mentioned before, we'd like to hear from our listeners. So if it's not an iTunes review, you can hit us up on Gmail at thecitadelcafe@gmail.com. You can hit us up on Twitter and Google Plus with just our name, The Citadel Cafe. You can also use the Winter is Coming TCC tagline or hashtag line if you're talking about your Winter is Coming Game of Thrones viewing and you'd like to have something contributed to the show that way. And I have a note here from Chad. He wants you to like us on Facebook. So we still don't have a whole lot of likes on Facebook. I manage most of the social media accounts myself. I do spend most of my time on Google Plus and Twitter, so Facebook has been kind of lacking. I mean, the RSS feed updates when I update the blog, but Facebook does not have a lot of love. So if you are a Facebook person and you are a Citadel Cafe person, then like us on Citadel Cafe on Facebook. And there's no official URL yet. You just have to type a word search for the Citadel Cafe, or actually just there's a link right from the blog.
If that's you go to, why we want them to like us.
Yeah, so we can get get the official handle, the URL. There we go. That's the acronym that I'm looking for, because there's not enough acronyms on the internet. I can't remember the simplest one.
Not at all.
Yeah, so and that blog is thecitadelcafe.com. And the show notes on that blog are written by Jocelyn Moffitt of the Gamers In Podcast. If you're a gamer, check out Jocelyn and her co-host Ryan over at gamersinpodcast.com. I have a insider tip that they're going to be talking about a game that's upcoming, and all of a sudden I'm drawing a blank. I was going to be really smooth right there and get all kinds of geek cred. Mass Effect 3. Yes. I did that before the chat room caught up. I'm impressed. Okay, so yeah, that's one of the things that they're going to be talking about soon, because Mass Effect is coming up as a March 7th release. Look at me with the brownie points. Wow. Alrighty. I have been Joel Duggan since the day I was born. You can find my comic and pretty much all that I am up to on starcrossedonline.com. You can also follow me on Twitter and Google Plus with just my name, Joel Duggan. Peyton, where can people find you online?
CardboardTreehouse.com and on Twitter at Peyton Francis, or on the Google, the plus and the face and the book and all that fun stuff.
Nice.
Just don't Google on his face.
No, that's bad. Never Google on anybody's faces. Chad, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Twitter at Chad and Roland.
Fantastic. You have been listening to the Citadel Cafe, where we are fast, we are easy, and we are cheap, but you can only pick two.
Not moist, though.
I'll just speak of this out of my mouth for Chad. The Canadians are a horrible team. Yeah, I know, Chad, aren't they? Yeah, the Leafs are going to win it this year. I know, Chad. It's an awesome, yeah, big fan.